There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Okay, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday, hour of live local talk. And phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. And we bring on, not for the first time, been on with us many times, but now in the past I've addressed him as State Senator Cam Ward. Now let's address him by his brand new title as the Director of Alabama's Bureau of Pardon and Paroles. Cam Ward, thanks for joining us.
Sean, thanks for having me back on again. How are you today?
I'm good, and congratulations on the new position here in the state of Alabama.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's a kind of a natural evolution for me. I think it's a good fit, but I'm looking forward to the challenge ahead.
Yeah, we got challenges. We got really big challenges, and something that I'm going to point out to folks that have not been here for the history of this radio station. You and I started talking about this. It was during the first term of former Governor Bentley. Am I right? Is that when the...
That is correct, yes.
And you and I have been talking about what might happen if Alabama didn't make certain changes in our prison system. And we've laid out the history of like what had happened in Alabama before or more recently in California. But it was this, it was, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, but year went by and another year went by and years went by and it, the hammer didn't come down. But now it has.
Yeah, so you know we've lost a lawsuit. We, the state, lost a lawsuit in federal court with Judge Thompson, and then we've mediated a couple things. But the DOJ thing was a little new and interesting, in that they had a whole separate issue from what the courts have ruled against us on, and they kind of gave us all some warnings, and I think they finally said, look, we're ready to move forward with litigation instead of continuing to mediate.
Okay. Every time that I've talked about this before with you and with other members of state government, that we've said, well, you know, they're looking at this, but if we show that we're working in good faith, and I'm paraphrasing here, but working in good faith, working towards a solution, maybe that keeps this at bay for some period of time until we can get things done on prison builds and some other items here. Did you know, or when did you know that wasn't going to be enough? When did you know that this would happen with DOJ?
I think it was a surprise when they finally filed. I mean, not that surprise they filed lawsuit. I think the timing was a bit of a surprise. I think Attorney General Marshall, I think Governor Ivey, have both been trying to work as hard as they can to come up with a solution with them. But I think, from what I understand, they made a surprise announcement with their decision
now
to go ahead and file suit. Now, again, it's not a surprise they filed suit. I mean, it didn't take a genius to realize that at some point they were going to try to sue us anyway. But I think the timing was kind of a little off because, like I say, Attorney General Marshall and Governor Ivey have been trying to work with them in good faith to come up with a solution.
Well, that's what I guess that's when I say surprise. Yeah, obviously this is a thing and it's been happening. We've been working on it. But I guess I had this idea from conversations I'd had and things I had read that because the governor was in discussions on this prison bill, because we had done some other things, a consent decree, but we were moving forward.
We were, yes.
And so therefore DOJ would give us time before. But they did. Is there something specifically we failed on, or was it acute or chronic? What kicked this in?
No, I think they're saying chronic. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think So you have two different folks. So you have U.S. attorneys who are political appointees, and then you also have more senior-level folks at DOJ, Civil Rights Division, others that are career. And I think they looked at it probably over a period of time and said, all right, we're just tired of fooling with you.
It's a shame, because we'll get into the possibilities, but let's, I guess, set the stage for people that have not paid attention to this. You say, you know, that this is the Eighth Amendment violation. What is an Eighth Amendment violation? That's what they're saying, right?
What the Department of Justice is trying to say is that we are violating the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. So that's where they say officer on inmate violence, inmate on inmate violence, cruel living standards, and they're saying it violates the Eighth Amendment. Very similar to how they've done in other states where their correction system got in trouble, too.
Okay, I want to interject one of those models in there that you and I have talked about over the years, and the one that really, and I read up on it after the first time you and I talked about it, is what happened in California. Okay, is it close enough? Is it apples to apples comparing what happened in California?
There are similar parallels. I mean, what you don't want eventually, California, and I may be in the minority on this, I believe, and I was a member of the legislature when we didn't do what we need to do to fix it. But I will say, I think policy-wise, you cannot ignore these rulings or these lawsuits, or else eventually you get into a California model where not only do you lose a lawsuit, but you go into receivership. Now, we're not there yet, but that's what you have to worry about.
Okay, and I want to describe kind of some of the lowlights of receivership in a second. But so what happened yesterday doesn't necessarily mean we go into receivership?
No. That's the first step. It's okay. A lawsuit. But it is what you have to be concerned about is when they file a suit and then the federal court here, Judge Thompson, already has ruled against us. You don't want, it's like two hurricanes merging together. That's never a good thing, and that's what you have to worry about.
So if we go to, if people hear us talking about receivership, can you give like a quick, you know, paragraph? What does that look like? What does that mean when the federal government gets receivership of a state's corrections program?
Well, if you ever get to that point, and that is the nuclear option, you hope you never get to that point, but if you do, and Alabama was here in the late 1970s mm-hmm. and 1980s. If they do that, what happens is you get a appointed federal receiver, someone who oversees your entire correction system. And what that means is the state lawmakers and state government, you lose control over that part of your budget and that part of your government. And they can dictate to you what you will and will not spend, and you have no choice but to come up with money to spend it on that.
I mean, they could say, this is what needs to be built. This is what who needs to be hired. This is how much money to spend. And even if it's not in the general fund budget, what do you do?
You're going to spend it. Yeah, you're going to spend it either way. They're going to make either you're going to cut something else or you're going to raise revenue to pay for it, but you don't have a choice. You have to do it.
Okay. So the road between that, what you call the nuclear option there with receivership, and where we sit now, is it just down the street? Is there a long way between the two? What's the reality?
That's going to be more on the legal. The legal folks are going to have to debate that out. I will tell you, though, this is me being a former legislator. From what I've seen, you're going to have some legislative action to address some of this. And I think there's a lot of legislators who realize that and want to do something. But that's what it's going to require. There's going to be some policy changes.
Okay. And as you know, when you were a senator and the responsibility of the Senate and the House, this subject comes up. Y'all knew it was a thing. Like I said, you and I have been talking about it for a long time, dang near a decade, probably, it seems like. And so we talk about it, and then it just, I think, okay, going into session this year, or the next mm-hmm. year, or the next year, they're going to tackle this, and it doesn't get tackled. Now, it's not a politically popular thing to talk about funding prisons, I know that, but what's could happen here is not popular either.
No, you don't want this. If you ever get to this point, not only do you lose control as a policymaker, but you lose control for years. It's not a one-time hit. It's years and years and years, and it disrupts the rest of your general fund appropriations. I mean, if you're not going to raise taxes, which I can't imagine anybody wanting to raise taxes to pay for prisons, what's going to happen is you're going to have to cut some other agency to pay for all this, and it's not going to be cheap.
And so the plan does this – the executive branch action that the governor talked about, the it's not private prisons, but building a prison privately and us running and staffing with ADOC, could we go back and say, listen, we're going to move that timeline up faster and avoid this?
I think under her timeline, you're moving about as fast as you can. I think the issue, and one thing people miss out on, the opponents miss out on the construction that Governor Ivey is trying to do, in my personal opinion, is that she is, in order to accomplish some of the things that Judge Thompson's already had in his order, better mental health treatment, better rehabilitation, better health care, you can't do it in the current facilities. There's no way to do that. You've got to have new facilities, not for an increase in capacity, but for an increase in services that you provide to the population. I think that's a big part. I mean, it's not the only part, but it's a big part of getting around the Eighth Amendment concerns that DOJ raises.
Now, how big of a ticket can this what does it look like? I mean, you talk about not just you're adding staff to talk about what you're saying, not just brick and mortar.
No, we actually the way that the layouts are that they're looking at, you would reduce staff.
Well, you've said that before, that the new,
or you're really just shuffling them around. You would have to close out of your roughly 18, 19, 20 facilities. You would close about 13 of them. And you pay, what their plan is to pay for those new facilities with the savings you gain from closing the old ones.
Okay. The problem is here that, I mean, I'm not a prison constructor, contractor, but you can't snap your fingers and make that happen. But the suit is here now.
It's going to take you a few years to do all that. It's not going to happen overnight. You're talking 3, 4, 5 years.
So do we go into receivership before
there's an assumption that if you start construction, that somehow stops any talk of the further DOJ suit or Judge Thompson holding us accountable. No, I think construction's a big part of it. I think that there's going to be other policy decisions the legislature has to make in conjunction with that. What they really want to see legally, if you look at the history of these lawsuits, they want to see that you're at least trying to make an effort, that you're trying to get it done. And that if you are trying to make an effort, then they're going to give you some slack. But if they look at you and say, the policymakers just don't care what we think, and they're thumbing their nose at us.
I mean, we were told so many times that it would be addressed in session, and then we were told coming out this year that it was going to be, hey, Sean, that looks like it's going to be special session. They'll get to it in special. And that didn't happen. I mean,
COVID-19 really just cut your legs out from underneath.
But doesn't DOJ know that? Can't you make that argument to DOJ and say, look,
you may have to ask DOJ about that. Department of Justice may know more than us on that. But I would argue that, yes, there were like 12 to 15 bills. Not all of them are going to pass. 12 to 15 bills. I think there was a will on behalf of the legislature, and there was a will on by the budget chairman to make it work. COVID-19 really cut our legs out from underneath us. And in fact, now, to tell you how bad COVID has dealt with state government is that your lawmakers can't even come back in to renew economic incentives that have expired.
Mainly
because COVID won't let us in the building.
Or liability protection,
yeah,
or not having to pay taxes on our
COVID-19 legislation that we need so badly, you can't do because we can't get back in that building.
Well, there has to be. I think there's will amongst many to get back in that building.
The legislature will have to go back in, and that's a hard decision they've got to make because they've got some members, some have had COVID, some are susceptible, vulnerable population. The legislative leadership, I think, has some really, really tough decisions to make, and I don't envy the leadership on that.
All right, we're coming back. More of the conversation with Cam Ward, who has been, of course, Senator Cam Ward, and on with us for years discussing this. Now he is the director of the Alabama Bureau of Pardons and Paroles. And that thing we talked about maybe could happen has happened. What is it going to look like? What does it all mean? That's what we're trying to pick through right now on Midday Mobile. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, so welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, online at fmtalk1065.com. Also, check out the stories we're talking about here on the radio on our Facebook page, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. Also, Instagram, Twitter, the website, fmtalk1065.com, where you can stream our station anywhere you got a signal on your smartphone there. Continued conversation with Director of Alabama Bureau of Pardons and Paroles, Cam Ward. I'm retraining myself, Cam, to say that. I've been calling you Senator Cam Ward for a long time, so it's It's going to be a training process here. You've had the job now 2 days, right?
Correct. I'm always enjoying being back on the radio with you.
Yeah, and I enjoy this conversation. I want to point something out because I'm looking at some text. You and I have been talking about this subject since Obama, it was President Obama's time, now transitioned into President Trump. And like Terry had said, the DOJ Civil Rights Division is rife with Democrats. I think this is retribution for Alabama supporting Trump. Talk about that. If we're going to get into the politics of this, talk about that.
Well, first of all, if you look at the original lawsuit that was lost by, you know, we'd go back to California going to receivership. That was a Democrat administration, so, you know, that put California under. They're definitely not a red state by any stretch of the imagination. But the lawsuit, or the, at least on the DOJ side, not the federal court side, on the DOJ side, their initial investigation and concerns actually began with President Trump's appointed U.S. attorneys. All three were Republicans. So I don't know. It's easy to cast blame in partisan politics on this, but I think it's much deeper than that.
Well, that's what's been, you know, said over the 4 years of President Trump, that, y'all, this is something that is being pursued by Republicans here. So I don't know how we didn't feel that this, maybe it's just too many cooks in the kitchen or something like that, that you and I talked about this. People in Alabama knew this was an issue, but nothing was done. And here we sit now. Is it now it's real serious. Now we're going to do something about it.
At some point you'll have to have some political will to do. And that's not an indictment on any party or any person. It's just the nature of prisons. Nobody likes to deal with, you know, prisons. It's not popular when you need something for right. Your schools, or you need something for, you know, public safety, law enforcement, or this or that. At the end of the day, everybody goes, man, I got to spend a bunch of money on prisons. It's just not popular politically with anybody.
But it is a function of government, though. That is, you know, when
it
we look at the
core function, it is the core function of public safety. And, you know, if you let that get away from you, you're going to have a whole lot more problems down the road.
Right. That's the problem. I mean, we have money and we spend on different things in the state at they may be good and they may be politically popular, but I don't know that they go higher on a list as a core job of government than corrections.
And that's not just an indictment. That's just not an Alabama indictment. That's just politics around the country. I mean, you look at, there's a reason why, you know, some of your biggest issues around the states are your correction system, because it's just, end of the day, it's not a vote getter. I hate to say it, but that's just the blunt part of it. And I said that when I was in the Senate. It's just it's hard for an elected official to go back home and say, hey, by the way, I want to do this instead of giving money to my elementary schools that need it. You know, it's hard, but it's going to be one of those necessary things that not just the legislature, but also the executive, all of us together, everybody has a role to play in it.
Well, the executive branch here is really the lead dog on this at this point with that prison construction plan, right? And is that where we go? Because I've had these discussions. Should it be something that's taken up in the legislature and we bond this out instead of doing this?
It's a piece of the puzzle. Now, how you get there, where the legislature does it, the governor does it, that's a debate for the policymakers and the governor's office. But, yeah, that is a piece of the puzzle. And then you also have our legal defense. You want to make sure that there's not an overreach or there's something they're trying to be punitive against us for. And I think that's what Attorney General Marshall's trying to do. He's fighting to make sure, hey, look, I want to make sure we're not being treated in a way that no one else is being treated. So, yeah, it's executive, but then you're going to have some policy issues on sentencing reentry that the legislature deals with. So it's multiple parties.
Do we see, timeline-wise, just got a minute left here, but from your perspective, the what's next? You know, I'm always asking you what's next. So what is next? What do we wait for? What are you looking at?
I would say from my end, I'm focused on the pardon and parole side. I would say...
Right, they're going to say parole everybody. They're going to say get them out of there. Pardon and parole everybody.
You start just using numbers and say, let's just start letting everybody out. That's a mistake. That doesn't work for criminal justice. That doesn't promote public safety. And it doesn't help somebody who's reentering society. I think you're now going to see a lot of legal issues coming up. And I think our state's attorneys, through General Marshall, will deal with that. But at the same time, there'll be more and more conversations, I think, among policymakers who've called me, who said, hey, maybe we should start revisiting some of this stuff.
And what can be done? I mean, is it all just executive? I mean, what can be done before the legislature meets again?
Well, I mean, the executive's already on their way to doing the construction. construction part, but I think.
But you got to fund DOC. You're right. You got to fund the move into those facilities.
Fund DOC. Yeah. Well, no, actually, that part's going to they're going to fund that for the savings or close another one. But there's several things that can be done. But I think the policymakers do realize, hey, we got a problem. We need to address some of this now.
Yeah. Just I hope so. I'm shaking my head because you and I have been talking about this a long time. And here we go. The thing we want to keep from happening.
Sean, I'm an eternal optimist. I figure at some point we're going to get it right.
I hope you're right. He is director of the Alabama Bureau of Pardons and Paroles and a longtime state senator, Cam Ward. Our guest, thanks for your time, and I'll be bringing you in front again soon. Thank you. All right, so there it is. That's the subject, and it's been, gosh, we've talked about this a long time. And now some of the, I don't know if all the chickens came home to roost, but quite a few of them have. And it can be, if you're just now waking up to this story, it could be, you look at what happened in California. We do not want that. Do not want it. Don't want any part of it. Don't want to get a version of it. Don't want to even have it shadow. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, oddly enough, hinging off of what we just talked about with Director of Alabama Bureau of Pardons and Paroles, Cam Ward, we'll talk about this protest. That we, the Faith in Action group that was going to protest in front of Sheriff's Office and the jail downtown. We'll get to that in just a second. All right, let me tell you, put some pictures up on the Twitter feed the other day at FM Talk 106.5 that were handcrafted, these pictures by my daughter, because she's way better at the photography than me, but she's lucky I'm pretty good at cooking those fantastic steaks from Omaha Steaks, and we're just enjoying them once again at our house. Love the Omaha Steaks. It's a holiday tradition. I'd like to make it a year-round tradition, and if you feel like it's been a long time waiting for this holiday season, you're right, so make it worth it now and send the gift of Omaha Steaks. Send some to yourself while you're at it. Do this. Go to omahasteaks.com. And put my first name, Sean, S-E-A-N, in the search bar. So Sean in the search bar at omahasteaks.com. You'll see the Deluxe Grillers Assortment. Steakhouse caliber package, great mouthwatering meat, and it's all just for $129.99. You'll get, here's what you get. 4 famously fork tender butcher cut filet mignon, 8 boneless chicken breast, 4 ultra juicy Omaha Steaks burgers, 4 gourmet jumbo franks, 4 individually wrapped scalloped potatoes, and 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets that last about 12 seconds on the plate at our house. It's good stuff, all of it, and it's a great gift, and it's a great gift for yourself. Package also includes a free digital meat thermometer and 4 free Omaha Steak burgers. So go to omahasteaks.com and enter my first name, that's your code, Sean, S-E-A-N, into the search bar and order this package today. Plus, you'll get the free burgers and the digital meat thermometer. Do omahasteaks.com. When you see the search bar, enter my first name, Sean, S-E-A-N, and pick up that Deluxe Grillers Assortment as a gift for yourself or others today. All right, so a couple things on the list here. Number one, this was going on this morning, and I guess I'm looking at I think this feed is maybe, an hour old or something like that. Watching the video from WKRG on their Facebook Live, and okay, so I'm seeing that this Faith in Action group that said they were going to protest in front of the sheriff's office today. They're there, and they were there. Like I said, I think what I'm watching is probably about an hour old. And I know a lot of y'all were asking me on the text line what's going on with that. From what I can see, in this live shot, it's at least 2-1 members of the media to protesters. In other words, each protester has at least 2 members of the media to cover them. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 9 or 10? Yeah, maybe 10. Let's see, there's another person behind. Okay, 10. So 10 protesters, and it looks like at least 20 members of the media to cover this. I want to point this out. Not that it's, you know, you want to protest and you do it properly. That's, hey, man, that's what we're all about in this country. I may disagree with you, but you got the right to protest. But I just want to point out, and I guess TV is doing this by showing this Facebook Live, but like a story will come out and say, protesters today showed up at so-and-so to protest this and that. And you hear that, and if you don't go look at pictures, if you don't go look at video, you just get an image in your mind, right? Protesters, wow, it's going to be a throng of people. Doesn't mean it's a throng of people. You could say, I mean, right now I'm pointing out there are more members of the media covering the protesters in that shot I'm looking at than there are protesters. But the story gets reported like there's some groundswell out there to go protest this. So I want to point this out that, once again, I protest, do it legally, do it correctly, go protest. It's one of the things we're about here. But make sure when you hear, hey, there's protests of this and protests of that, that you go look if you want to, you know, just have an idea how many people. Because we can find, you know, these are people that are upset with the Thug Thursday Christmas tree thing and all the stuff we talked about earlier this week and had the sheriff on this. But you could find, I mean, pick something. Go to the web. I don't care. It could be the thing that you would think would be least offensive to anybody, and there's somebody out there online who didn't like. I tell you what, I used to get grief. It was, if I remember this right, yeah, it when we do, and we still do it each year, when it's 9/11, and we play clips and talk about timelines and all that from that horrible day in our country. I used to have somebody get mad at me on social media because it was their birthday and they said I ruined their birthday. So there were people, who protest me remembering the folks on 9/11 because I was ruining their birthday. So I just want to point that out. Terry says, if they are right wing, it's a mob. If it's a left wing protest, it's always peaceful or mostly peaceful. The mostly peaceful, you know, the shot, Terry, that I love there. I didn't love what happened, but it was so ridiculous. It was a stand up, right? A report, but there's a still shot of it. The reporter in Minneapolis said a mostly peaceful protest, and you see the fires, like the fires of Mordor in the background or something like that. Like, yeah, good. That looks mostly peaceful. You know, Terry, sometimes I'll say this. You are correct in the short term. You are correct in the 4 years of President Trump. That exactly. If it's right wing, it's a mob. It's left wing, it's a peaceful, mostly peaceful protest. But in the past, too, the shoe's been on the other foot. Now, during Trump, you're right, man. You're 100% right. But I bet you we go back through the newsreels, and depending on the angle that wanted to portray, you had a group, and you would call them, you know, people voicing their First Amendment rights, or call them a mob. I mean, those words have been used on both sides. I'll get to that in 2 seconds here. I want to go back to something, and people commented on after I talked to Robert Kennedy last hour about this Hunter Biden investigation. Number one, I'm glad that this is continuing, and not just say. It's not just a thing that I'm saying, oh, I'm glad it's all partisan. I would like all the claims that are and allegations that are made before, and I'd like this to go both ways, meaning the people that said, you know, whatever claim was made about President Trump before election time, then go ahead and let's go and pursue it. If he's done all these horrible things and all this fraud, then pursue it. Don't make claims and don't pursue them. So here I'm happy. Even though it, I think, came too late to have the political effect, because it takes, even though y'all pick up information quickly and process it, but for the general public, it takes a while to get stories going. The Hunter Biden story came too late in the political cycle, but the fact that it didn't just go away, and that you've got the FBI and the IRS Criminal Investigation Agency looking at it, that's good. If he did wrong, which it looks like, but
He's innocent until proven guilty, but it looks bad that they continue with this. But the idea that Hunter Biden can be, and Hunter Biden can be expendable at this point, that Hunter Biden is expendable without having any reflection or any further questioning of Joe Biden, I don't see that. You know, and a lot of people on the left have said, okay, well, Hunter Biden will be, you know, if he's guilty, then get, you know, that's, you, we'll get him and do that. But that's no reflection on Joe Biden. Do we believe? I mean, there's, yeah, somebody had texted about what had happened in Ukraine. And remember, the two places that Biden was charged with looking into, Ukraine and China, those are two places that that Hunter Biden did some business, right? Got a gig, got a paycheck. Talking about what was said by Joe Biden to the leadership there in the Ukraine. If it doesn't bear further investigation, if half of the allegations against Hunter Biden that the FBI is investigating now, if half of them are true, and you're telling me, you'll just say, okay, well, everything's fine. They got Hunter Biden. Obviously, no implication there for the president. You're not going to look into that further? Come on. Just, without the pressure of Joe Biden, does Hunter Biden get any of these deals rated? No. No, he doesn't. But at least an allegation made before election time is being pursued. And that's a good thing. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 152 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Oh, online opinion poll question. So we asked it this morning over at FMTalk1065.com, also on our Facebook page. In light of the governor's mask mandate extension, do you wear your mask in public? Never. Sometimes. Most of the time. All the time. What's your, what, you know, because we kind of got into the conversation of, you know, another mask mandate at least going through January 22nd. And, you know, what does that mean? I mean, when people say I'm a mask wearer, not mask wearer, well, there's people that are a mask wearer that don't always wear them, a sometimes mask. I just thought it was interesting. So you can get those votes in over at our website, fmtalk1065.com, and our Facebook page, and we'll tally those up. And Dan and I will talk about that tomorrow. All right. So Brian and Fairhope saying yet another group that no one had ever heard of, that he's probably referencing that Faith in Action group that's in the protest that has nothing better to do, bring back the Thug Thursday Christmas tree. Sad Texter says, your comments about Hunter are dead on. It's refreshing to listen to someone who is loyal to the truth and not a party and can make their point without the use of fallacy. Thanks for hard work. Most nice. Thank you. Yes, unnamed texture here says Hunter's dad will pardon him. Listen, if we get to a point, what would be the most egregious pardoning a president could ever do? Like how bad would it get before we'd say, you know, let's call this into action here. Let's look, would it have to be a constitutional convention to remove the pardon ability? Is that like a vesicle tail there? The pardoning ability. Should we, this is a fair question asked, should you still have presidents? They're legally doing it. I mean, both parties pardon some people that are of question here. I haven't really ever thought about this deeply. What do y'all think? Do you like the presidents having a pardon, or would you, if you could, through a national popular vote or something, I don't know, would you remove
Would you remove the power of the pardon? Hey, Dan sent me something on this, and people have sent me stuff on people sent me stuff on Twitter on this, and I be honest with you, y'all are getting this all while I've been on the air, and I've kind of been real busy in here. Picture, it's a PETA protest, is what it, and what I've been told. Dan's describing it, and then somebody on Texter, I mean, on Twitter sent this to me. PETA says, okay, y'all help me understand this. Maybe somebody can call in and explain this, because I have not had time to process this news story. What I've seen here is a headline that says, "No More Monkey Business," which, if y'all know conversations in the past, something that everything I did, I think my dad called it monkey business, and that I was monkeying around. So the word monkey makes me laugh. Okay. It says, "Confining monkeys and forcing them to pick coconuts isn't just bananas, it's abuse. These monkeys are exposing publics for being complicit." So this is a tweet from PETA. Is that the real PETA? Is it? It's Blue Check. The people eating tasty animals. I mean, people for the ethical treatment of animals. Somebody's got to help me here. There's a picture here. There's a Publix. And there's three people in monkey suits, like Halloween monkey suit, stand there with signs protesting something about monkeys picking. Says, yeah, Publix is, they're forcing monkeys to pick coconuts. Now, we got, I'm lost on this. I'm going to need somebody to help me out here. Have I missed something as I've been busy adulting in my life and parenting and stuff? Have I missed that there's a big question about, like, I know, like, a lot of PETA's issues, right? They not real fond of people like me. But I didn't know monkey working conditions at coconut operations or something. Is that a thing? Leanna, have I missed something? Okay, so Dan's saying they've trained monkeys to pick coconuts. Oh, and PETA's upset by that? What the? It's a good gig for a monkey. So PETA would have, I mean, so if we could, so having a monkey that goes, so I'm guessing, I'm just kind of getting all these texts in here. So somebody in coconut farm somewhere, actually not a coconut farm, but an orchard. Would it be an orchard with coconuts? I guess it would. So coconut orchard, you got the coconuts are up there, right? Before they fall down and go on somebody's head. The coconuts are up there and you need the coconuts. So you send the monkey up the tree to get the coconut. Mm-hmm. That seems like not a bad gig for, I mean.
Don't they need something to do anyway?
That's right. That's right. Like, if these are monkeys, if monkeys were given an option of, like, being in a zoo behind bars.
Right.
Right? Or climbing up and getting a dang coconut.
Isn't that what they do anyway?
In the cartoons. Yeah. They go up there and get.
They climb around.
They climb around. They dig that. They're a monkey.
Right.
And here, you see the picture of this? You see, here's the picture. There's the people protesting in front of the Publix that Publix forces monkeys to pick coconuts.
And those are coconuts at their feet?
I guess. That's what they look
Aren't
like.
Aren't they going to be picking
they
them
look
up?
Like giant russet potatoes to me, but I don't have enough zoom here on this picture.
So. Well, I mean, aren't they going to be picking them up too?
Well, yeah,
are they
going
to take the monkey suit off before they pick it up?
I think they would if they want to stay clear to their message that monkeys shouldn't be picking coconuts. I guess by tomorrow we'll know a lot more about this. You know, with everything else going on in the news, this will be the thing that moves the top of the news cycle, that somewhere there's a monkey unhappy. Maybe OSHA will shut them down for monkey, you know, the monkeys not having hard hats or something.
I don't know. Do you think anybody really cares, though?
These three.
I mean, for it to be in national news.
I don't. That's why I feel like I've let the audience down. That the audience comes to me with this story, and I have no prior knowledge of coconut picking monkeys. Hey, I'll learn though. That's one thing I do. I'll go learn, and by tomorrow, I'll know more than I do today. I promise y'all that.
Good.
All right, we're out of here. Online, FMTalk1065.com, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.